washed away any remaining traces of blood from the dozens of dead bodies, guards that Celia de Mora had murdered with her magic to help the Fire Kindred, around the large, 30-foot-deep pit in the exact center of the compound. The rain had stopped, but the clouds were thick and dark, making midday appear more like dusk. She couldn't simply go back to the chambers Amara had lent her, doing nothing. The wait for news about Magnus would drive her mad. If there was so much magic inside her, why did she feel so powerless? Then she heard a sound, a loud bang. It was coming from the closed entry gates, which were 20 feet tall and took 6 guards great effort to open and close. A guard rushed up to Carlos out of breath.
"We have a situation, Captain."
"What is it?" Amara demanded before Carlos had a chance to answer.
"Someone is at the gates, demanding entry."
The man cringed as the bang sounded out again. The ground itself shook with the booming sound.
"It's Kayan, isn't it?"
the Empress said, her voice filled with fear.
"He's returned."
"A goddess," Cleo thought as panic gripped her throat.
"Not yet. I'm not ready."
"It's not him, Empress," the guard said. Amara's fear disappeared in an instant.
"Well, what is it then? A rebel attack? Wouldn't our scouts have forewarned us?"
"It's not rebels." The guard straightened his shoulders, but didn't mask how nervous he looked.
"It's worse than that.
Worse." 2 more bangs made the ground beneath Cleo's feet shudder. The air filled with the sound of guards shouting orders. 100 men, weapons in hand, flanked either side of the gate just as it splintered down the center. Untouched, the gate swung wide open from some invisible force. Guards stormed forward, but then each one flew backward, clearing a pathway for the intruders. 2 cloaked figures, one armed with a sword, entered and walked directly toward Cleo, to where she stood, tensely, with Amara and Carlos to her right. Cleo realized with shock that one of the cloaked intruders cradled a baby. The intruder pushed back the hood of her black cloak to reveal a familiar face. Lucia de Mora.
"Where is my brother?" she demanded.
Chapter 3 Lucia. Palcia. Jonas touched Lucia's arm.
"Try to stay calm."
She sent a tense look at him over her shoulder. What did he think she would do? Murder Cleo and Amara where they stood? Likely that's exactly what he thought she would do.
"I need answers," she gritted out.
Being met at the closed gates of this royal compound by a swarm of Amara's soldiers, their weapons drawn, had stolen what little calm she had left in her reserve. She wondered if the rebel was more concerned for Lucia's life or the lives of the dozens of armed guards that now surrounded them.
"Lucia,"
Amara said, drawing the sorceress's attention away from her far warier companion. The Cretian princess leaned on a wooden cane.
"Welcome. It's been a long time since I last saw you. Much has changed for both of us."
Lucia narrowed her gaze at the deceitful, conquering Empress, who, by all accounts, was now her stepmother.
"My brother and my father.
Where are they?"
The flank of guards drew closer, jostling for position, their swords pointed in Lucia's direction. Jonas finally lowered the hood of his cloak.
"Empress Amara, call off your guards. This isn't necessary."
"Jonas!" Cleo gasped.
"It's you!"
The Iranian princess had always been so brilliant at observation, Lucia thought dryly.
"Good to see you again, princess," Jonas said, a smile tugging at his lips.
"You too,"
Cleo replied, her voice strained. Jonas sounded far happier about the reunion than Lucia felt. Seeing Amara and Cleo standing side by side had raised Lucia's ire tenfold. She'd half expected Cleo to be a prisoner here,
at the mercy of the new empress whose army occupied the whole of Mitica. But clearly she wasn't.
Your father stood against me. He tried to murder me, Amara said evenly. But I assure you he's unharmed. I'm sure you can understand why I've chosen to keep him under lock and key. He's a dangerous man.
That he certainly was. No argument from Lucia.
I'm sure you're pleased about that, she said to Cleo.
Cleo's glare was sharp enough to cut.
You wouldn't have any idea how I feel about anything that's happened here.
Lucia tried very hard to hold on to her patience.
Where is he?
She asked Amara.
I will take you to see him myself,
Amara replied, her tone as light and casual as if they discussed nothing more urgent than the weather.
My goodness, Lucia, what a beautiful child. Whose is it?
Lucia looked down at Lyssa in her arms, her sweet face not showing any distress after her mother had blasted through the locked gates with air magic. In fact, the baby was currently sound asleep. She raised her gaze to lock with Amara's.
Take me to him now.
Amara hesitated, glancing at the large guard standing next to her, and then regarded Lucia again.
With pleasure. Please follow me.
Wait here,
Lucia said to Jonas. Her command was met with a glare.
Yes, your highness, he said with mock sincerity.
Lucia knew that Jonas was annoyed with her tendency to issue orders at him as if he were a servant. It was a habit more than a conscious decision. The thought that this morning he'd somehow entered her nightmare still disturbed her. He was a mystery to her in so many ways. But despite this, she'd come to trust and value him. However, if he expected her to be sweet and polite all the time, he was traveling with the wrong princess. Their travels together ended here. Jonas would not have to deal with her foul moods another day. There was no reason to feel regret over this.
So be it.
Lucia sensed something unusual about Cleo as she passed the other princess, but she chose to ignore it as she followed Amara to the compound's prison area. The Empress leaned against her guard as well as her cane, limping as she walked. Lucia concentrated, sending out a whisper of earth magic that helped her sense Amara's injury. A broken leg. Achieving ultimate power over a newly conquered land did not come without injury, it would seem. As they moved past the dusty villas and cottages that made up the royal compound, Lucia half expected to feel some sort of familiarity with these grounds. Her birth father had ruled from here, a madman who thought himself a god. She knew nothing about her real mother, only that she died as well. Her sister by blood, Lelia, worked as a dancer in a tavern in the city of Basilia on the west coast of Pelsia. Perhaps one day she might go and ask Lelia more questions about her birth family. At the moment, though, her past was insignificant to her. Lucia focused now on only three goals: reuniting with Magnus and her father, ensuring Lyssa's future, and imprisoning Kyan by any means necessary in his amber orb, which she kept with her in the pocket of her cloak. Anything beyond these goals was an unwanted distraction. As they entered the prison, Amara led Lucia down narrow hallways that the injured Empress navigated very carefully with her guard's help. She didn't complain once, which Lucia grudgingly respected. They passed many locked iron doors, but Amara finally came to a stop in front of one at the end of the hallway, which she placed her hand upon.
"If you wish to speak with Gaius," Amara said, "I have a few rules that must be obeyed."
Lucia raised her brows.
"Do you?"
She flicked her finger at the door, which swung open instantly. Amara's hulking guard immediately reached for a sword.
"Spare me such displays."
Lucia used another blast of air magic to send the sword down the hallway, where it embedded itself into the stone wall,
but not nearly as deeply as she'd intended. Amara's expression didn't shift from one of royal composure. However, her lips now formed a thin line.
Your air magic is incredible.
Not as incredible as Lucia would like it to be. After stealing Jonas's strange but strong reserve of Elementia last night to survive Lyssa's birth, Lucia had slowly but surely begun to feel it fading from her again. But Amara didn't have to know that.
I will speak to my father in private, Lucia said. You should hope that he is as unharmed as you claim. He is.
Amara nodded at her guard, who led her away from the door without another word. Holding her breath, unsure what she would find within, Lucia turned toward the interior of the cell, unable to see anything within but shadows and darkness. Amara had kept her father in darkness. Fury rose within her at the thought.
My beautiful daughter.
More powerful and magnificent than ever before.
The sound of the king's strong voice was such a relief that tears sprang to her eyes. She flicked her hand to light the torches on the walls with fire magic. King Gaius blinked against the sudden blaze of light, shielding his eyes with the back of his hand.
Father!
Her voice broke on the word. She entered the cell completely, closing the door behind her to give them privacy from curious ears. He had a short beard on his chin, and dark circles beneath his eyes as if he hadn't slept in days.
"Apologies for my appearance, daughter," he said. "You seem to have found me in a shamefully unfortunate state."
She couldn't remember the last time she'd allowed herself to cry. She didn't allow it this time, but hot tears still streaked down her cheeks. Her throat was so tight it made it difficult to speak, but she forced the words out.
"I'm the one who should apologize. I left you. You and Magnus. I was wrong. And because of my selfishness, so much has happened. I can't fix it all, but I'm going to try to fix as much as I can. Please forgive me."
"Forgive you? There is nothing to forgive. I'm just thankful you're alive and well."
His dark brows drew together, and he moved forward as if to take her into his arms. But he froze when his gaze moved toward the small bundle in her arms.
"Whose child is this, Lucia?"
Again, a shameful swell of emotion made her words difficult.
My daughter. Her name is Lyssa."
She expected his kind expression to turn harsh, for his lips to thin, for words of strong reprimand for being so careless. He pushed the soft cloth away from Lyssa's face and looked down into the face of his granddaughter.
"She's as beautiful as her mother."
Lucia stared at him.
"You're not angry?"
"Why would I be?"
Still, there was a gravity to his words.
"She's Alexius's child."
She nodded.
"The daughter of a sorceress and an exiled watcher,"
he mused.
"You will need to protect her."
"With your help, I will," she replied.
"This was a swift birth. I haven't seen you in what feels like forever, but it's only been a matter of months."
"I visited the sanctuary," she said. "Something about being there. I'm sure that's what quickened the process."
"She's a newborn,"
she nodded.
"Last night."
He looked at her, shocked.
"You seem so well, considering you just gave birth."
"It wasn't a normal birth,"
Lucia confessed, needing to share this with someone she trusted. And this man, this king of blood, who'd had her stolen from her cradle, who'd raised her as his daughter because of her prophecy, despite his choices, his reputation, his treatment of others. Lucia cannot say he had ever been cruel to her, only kind, only forgiving. Gaius de Mora was her father, and she loved him.
"What do you mean?"
he prompted. And she explained it to him as best she could, about Timotheus' prophecy that she would die in childbirth, about finding the magic within herself to survive. She felt it best not to mention Jonas's mysterious connections to the Watchers and the magic he'd allowed her to take from him. Lucia told her father that after a wave of agony in which she'd been certain she would lose consciousness, Lyssa was simply there, lying on the rain-soaked ground, her eyes glowing bright violet in the darkness, the same violet as Lucia's ring. Her father listened carefully, not interrupting her once.
"Only more proof that Lyssa is very special," he said. "As special as you are."
"I agree. She is special."
Something heavy in her chest that she'd been carrying for months finally eased.
"Where's Magnus?" she asked. "Is he in another cell?"
When the king met Lucia's gaze, she saw pain in his dark eyes. She drew in a sharp breath.
"What happened? Tell me."
And he did tell her. About finding her grandmother, a woman she'd thought had died a dozen years ago. About her father and brother's capture by Amara's soldiers. About Amara's association with the Fire Kindred and the sacrifices she'd placed at the bottom of a nearby pit. About Cayan's possession of Niccolo Cassian's body, and how the ritual was brought to a sudden halt by her grandmother's death, but not before the other three kindred had chosen flesh-and-blood vessels. That of a Watcher Lucia didn't know, a friend of Jonas's she didn't know, and Cleo.
"And Magnus?"
she prompted, when she could find her breath again.
"Lord Curtis Cirillo took him away. Somewhere. There's a search. I know this. I don't know anything else, because I've been locked in this bloody prison. Useless."
There was fury in the king's gaze now, tempered with regret.
"He hates me for all I've done. And I don't blame him. I tried to help him the only way I could."
His breath hitched, and he paused, as if trying to find his composure again.
"But I fear it wasn't enough."
It was on the tip of her tongue to ask him how he thought he could help, but her thoughts were stolen away by the name of a boy from her past. Someone hateful and cruel and without remorse. Curtis Cirillo. Lucia had a sudden memory of coming upon a twitching, dying kitten in the corridors of the Lemurian Palace. Lord Curtis had been nearby, snickering at her horrified reaction. She'd had nightmares about that poor kitten for weeks afterward. Magnus had hated Curtis, but tolerated him only because he was the son of Lord Gareth, a friend and advisor to the king.
"Where is Curtis now?"
she hissed.
"I don't know. He hasn't been located, to my knowledge. All I know is that he had reason to want revenge upon Magnus."
Everything else she'd heard from the king fell to the background. All of it could wait.
"We need to find him together," she said.
"I'm Amara's prisoner."
"Not anymore."
She sent air magic at the door, and it blew right off its hinges. Amara had been standing just outside the room with her guard, her expression filled with alarm as Lucia left the cell with her father beside her.
"The search for my brother?" Lucia asked. "What news is there?"
Amara's face paled.
"Nothing yet, I'm afraid. There is a search party out, 30-40 men. They may yet find him."
The Empress feared her. They all feared her. The reputation she'd built of not only being a prophesied sorceress, but one who had no difficulty slaughtering villages, might serve her well for a time. Lucia cannot wait for a search party. Her magic was still strong enough to blast through gates and doors. Perhaps she could channel it another way.
I need a private room, she said, and something that belonged to Magnus, something I can get a sense of him from.
With Alexius's guidance, she had performed a very special location spell to find and awaken the kindred. She'd heard of common witches who could find people or lost things with their magic, enhanced by blood. She hadn't tried this before, but she was a sorceress, not a common witch. Even with her fading and unreliable magic, it had to be possible. Amara didn't try to stop her or demand that Gaius be put back into his locked cell. She became the perfect hostess, accommodating Lucia's request in an instant.
"Follow me," she said.
Lucia handed Lyssa to her father when they reached the room Amara led them to.
"I want to help if I can," Amara said.
"You can't help," Lucia growled. "Get out!" Amara's eyes narrowed slightly. Then she cast a dark look at Gaius, but didn't say another word. She nodded at her guard, and they left the room. Lucia had been given something that belonged to her brother. His black cloak had been found, discarded, in a hallway. The king recognized it, said it belonged to Magnus. It was torn and bloody. The sight of it brought fresh panic to Lucia's chest. Her brother had suffered at Curtis's hand.
"I'm so sorry," she thought,
clenching the rough material in her hand.
"I blamed you. I hated you. I doubted you. I left you when you were one of the best parts of my entire life. Forgive me, please."
She would find him. With her father standing close to her with her baby, Lucia took a seat on a section of the floor clear of any furniture, closed her eyes, and concentrated. Earth magic seemed to be the right element to call upon. She felt the weight of the cloak in her hand. She pictured Magnus, his tall stature, his dark hair that constantly fell into his eyes since he hated having it trimmed, his square jaw, his dark brown eyes that had gazed at her either seriously or mischievously, depending on the situation and the day. The scar on his right cheek, from an injury he said he could not clearly remember. The image of him shifted to something else then. Blood on his face, dripping from a fresh cut under his eye. Fury in his gaze. He strained against the chains that held his arms over his head.
"I can see him,"
Lucia whispered.
"Where? Where is he?" Gaius asked.
"I think I'm seeing what's already happened."
She tightened her grip on the cloak. Curtis's weasel-like face came into view, a cruel smile twisting his lips. Lucia drew in a sharp breath.
"I feel Magnus's hatred for Curtis. He wasn't afraid, even though the coward had to chain him up."
"I will kill him," the king growled.
Lucia tried to ignore him, tried to concentrate only on this vision in her mind. She'd once had another vision of the past, one of the original sorceress Eva's death at the hands of Millennia. The moment the kindred had made Cleona and Valoria into goddesses a millennium ago. She sank deeper into her earth magic and pressed it outward. Even now she could sense its growing limitations, and it frustrated her so much she wanted to scream. Timotheus told her that Eva's magic had also faded when she'd become pregnant, and this loss of strength and power had allowed her immortal sister the chance to end her life. Lucia squeezed her eyes shut and focused on Magnus. Only Magnus. She hugged his cloak to her chest and followed the trail of Earth Elementia. The trace of his life, his blood, his pain. Earth. Deep Earth. Shovelfuls of dirt, one after another, hitting a closed wooden box.
"No,"
she whispered.
"What do you see?"
her father asked.
"It's not what I see. It's what I feel. It's what Curtis did to Magnus after torturing him."
Her voice broke.
"He buried Magnus alive."
"What?"
Gaius roared.
"Where? Where is my son now?
Lucia tried to hold on to the horrific feelings and thoughts and scattered images moving through her mind, but they were as difficult to gather as dry leaves caught in a windstorm.
It's fading too quickly for me to sense that, she cried out. No! Oh, goddess, no! I sensed Magnus's heart beating in the darkness. But now...
Lucia! What do you sense now?
Gaius demanded. Lucia let out a shuddering sob and finally opened her eyes. It was gone. The magic was gone. And the location spell she'd attempted was over.
I sense only death.
A tear slipped down her cheek, but she didn't have the strength to push it away.
He's dead. Magnus is dead.
Chapter 4 Magnus, Pelcia. For those who had chosen the path of evil in their mortal lives, the Darklands had to feel exactly like this. Endless darkness, a slow, torturous suffocation, and pain. So much pain. Magnus's broken bones made him useless, unable to fight, to pound at the wooden barrier only a breath above his face. The expanse of time had felt eternal, but there was no way of knowing how long he'd been there. Trapped underground in a small, stifling wooden coffin. Struggling only made it worse. His throat was raw from screaming for someone, anyone, to find this freshly dug grave. Every time he slipped away into the escape of sleep, he was certain he wouldn't ever wake up again. Yet he did. Again and again. Lemurians weren't buried in wooden boxes like this. As worshippers of the goddess of earth and water, their bodies were laid to rest directly in contact with dirt in their frozen graves, or cast into the waters of the Silver Sea, depending on the family's decision. Pelcians burned their dead. Aranians worshipped the goddess of fire and air, so one would think they would favor the Pelcian burial ritual. But rich Aranians favored coffins chiseled from marble, while those of lower status chose wooden boxes.
Curtis had me buried like an Aranian peasant, Magnus muttered.
Surely this had to be the former King's Liege's final insult. To take his mind off of the horror of being buried alive and utterly helpless, he imagined how he would kill Lord Curtis Cirillo. After much consideration, he thought a Cretian torture technique he'd heard of involving slowly peeling off all the prisoner's skin sounded quite satisfying. He'd also heard of burying a victim in the ground up to their neck, then covering them with tree syrup and allowing a nest of hungry beetles to consume them slowly. That would be nice. Or perhaps Magnus would remove Curtis's remaining hand, saw it off slowly with a dull knife. Or a spoon. Yes. A spoon. The imagined sound of Curtis's screams helped Magnus shift his thoughts from his own situation. But these distractions rarely lasted long. Magnus thought he heard the distant echo of thunder. The only other sound was his own heartbeat, fast at first, but now much slower. And his breath, labored gasping when he'd struggled in the beginning, but now quiet. Shallow.
I'm going to die.
Curtis would finally get his vengeance, and such a death he'd chosen for his worst enemy. One in which Magnus had plenty of time to think about his life, his choices, his mistakes, his regrets. Memories of ice mazes and sculptures carved out of chunks of snow in the shadow of the Lemurian palace. Of a younger sister he'd foolishly pined for, who'd then looked at him with horror and disgust, and ran away with immortal pretty boys and fire monsters. Of a beautiful golden princess, who rightfully despised him, whose blue-green eyes held only hate for so long that he didn't remember precisely when her gaze had softened. This princess, who didn't push him away when he kissed her. Instead, She kissed him back with a passion that very nearly matched his own.
"Perhaps I'm only fantasizing all of it," he thought. "I helped my father destroy her life. She should celebrate my death."
Still, he allowed himself to fantasize about Cleo. His light, his hope, his wife, his love. In one fantasy, Magnus married her again, not in a crumbling ruin of a temple and under duress, but in a meadow filled with beautiful flowering trees and lush green grass.
"Beautiful flowering trees and lush green grass," he thought.
"What irrelevant nonsense fills my mind!" He much preferred the ice and snow of Lemaris. Didn't he? Magnus allowed himself to remember the princess's rare smiles, her joyful laugh, and, mostly amusingly, the sharp way she'd look at him when he constantly said something to annoy her. He thought about her hair. Always a distraction to him when she wore it down. Long golden waves over her shoulders and down to her waist. He remembered the silky brush of it during their wedding tour when he'd kissed her, which had happened only because of the cheering crowd's demands. A kiss he'd despised only because he'd liked it so much. Their next kiss in Lady Sophia's Lemarian villa had struck like a bolt of lightning. It had frightened him, although he'd never admit such a thing out loud. It was the moment he knew that, if he let her, this girl would destroy him. And then, when he'd found her in that small cottage in the center of a snowstorm, after he'd thought her dead and gone, and he'd realized how much she meant to him, that kiss hadn't ended nearly as swiftly as the others. That kiss had marked the end of the life he'd known before, and the beginning of another. When he learned she was cursed like her mother by a vengeful witch to die in childbirth, his selfish desires for her had ground to an abrupt halt. He would not risk her life for any reason, and together they would find a way to break this hateful curse. But Lord Curtis had been yet another curse cast upon them. Magnus remembered the threats Curtis had whispered to him while chained up and unable to tear the former King's Liege apart. Threats of what he would do to Cleo when Magnus couldn't protect her. Dark, nightmarish atrocities that Magnus wouldn't wish upon his worst enemy. Panic swelled within him as these thoughts brought him back to stark reality. His heart pounded, and he strained to break free of the small, stifling prison deep underground.
"I'm here!" he yelled. "I'm down here!"
He yelled it over and over, till his throat felt as if he'd swallowed a dozen knives, but nothing happened. No one came for him. After cursing the goddess he'd long since stopped believing in, he began to bargain with her.
"Delay my death, Valoria," he growled. "Let me out of here, and let me kill Curtis before he harms her. Then you can take my life any way you wish to."
But just like his yells for help, his prayers went unanswered.
"Damn you!"
He slammed his fist against the top of the coffin so hard that a splinter of wood wedged into his skin. He let out a roar, one filled with pain and frustration and fear. He'd never felt so helpless, so useless, so incredibly... Wait. He frowned as he ripped the splinter out of his skin with his teeth.
"My arm," he whispered in the darkness. "What's wrong with my arm?"
Actually, it wasn't what was wrong with it. It was what was right with it. His arm, both of his arms, had been broken at Curtis's command. He hadn't been able to move more than a little without immediate, crushing pain. He fisted his right hand, then moved his wrist and arm. There was no pain.
Impossible.
He tried again to move his left arm with the same result. And his leg, the sound of the crack it made when broken, and the mind-numbing pain that followed, was still far too fresh in his mind. He wiggled his toes inside his boot. No pain. A drop of mud squeezed between the narrow slats of the coffin and splashed into his eye, He winced and wiped it away. The thunder rolled high above him. The sound had been a constant since he'd been buried. If he concentrated, he could hear rain pounding down upon his grave and soaking into the earth covering his coffin. He pressed both of his hands flat against the wooden barrier above him.
"What am I thinking?" he mused. "That my bones somehow magically healed? I don't have earth magic like Lucia does. I'm hallucinating."
Or was he? After all, there was a way to keep one alive and well long after they were supposed to die. He'd learned about it only recently. Magnus frowned at the thought.
"Impossible. He wouldn't have given it to me."
Still, he began to search himself with arms that now worked and hands that were previously useless to him. He slid his palms down his sides, over his chest, feeling the suffocating press of wood on either side of him. He froze as he felt something small and hard in the pocket of his shirt, something he hadn't noticed until this very moment. Fingers trembling, he drew out the object. He couldn't see it in the complete darkness, but he could feel its familiar shape. A ring, but not just any ring. The Bloodstone. Magnus slid the ring onto the middle finger of his left hand, gasping as an immediate chill spread through his entire body.
"Father, what have you done?"
he whispered. Another drop of mud oozed onto his face, stunning him further. Magnus pressed his hands against the wooden slats above him that were damp from the rain that had soaked into the earth. His heart lurched at the thought. Damp wood could give easier than dry wood if he tried hard enough.
"No one is coming for you," he imagined Curtis's reedy voice mocking him. "There's no magic that'll keep you alive forever."
"That's what you think," Magnus muttered.
Along with the chill he'd felt from the Bloodstone's magic against his fingertips, strength also filled him again. He made a tight fist and punched upward, succeeding only in slicing his hand with more splinters from the wet wood. He grimaced, made another fist, and then punched again. This would take time. He imagined that the barrier above him was Curtis Cirillo's face.
"Beetles,"
Magnus gritted out as he punched at the wood again.
"I think I'll kill you with hungry, flesh-eating beetles."
Chapter 5. Amara, Palsea. Amara clutched the message that had arrived from Cratia in her fist as she limped into the royal compound's prison for the second time in as many days. Carlos had remained a strong, yet silent presence, and she appreciated her guard more than she'd say aloud. Of all the men that currently surrounded her, she trusted him the most. And trust, given recent events, was in extremely limited supply. She hated this prison. Hated the dank, musty odor it had, as if the scent from decades of prisoners had permanently soaked into the stone walls.
"Well, well, if it isn't the high and mighty destroyer of kingdoms herself blessing us lowly, pathetic creatures with her presence."
Felix Gabrus's painfully familiar voice made Amara's shoulders stiffen. She glanced to her left to see that he had been put into a cell with a small barred window in the iron door that showed part of his face, including the black eye patch covering his left eye. She remembered very clearly when he'd had two eyes that had once gazed at her with desire.
"I would reply, but I won't waste my breath," she said.
Felix snorted.
"And yet, that sounded like a reply. And to one as lowly and pathetic as me. Fortune must smile upon me today."
His sarcastic tone had once, not so very long ago, been one of his most endearing traits. Now it was only a reminder of her past decisions and the former assassin's current hatred for her. He shouldn't be sarcastic to anyone anymore. Had all gone according to plan, he would have been long dead and not yet another problem for Amara to deal with.
"Show respect to the Empress,"
Carlos snarled, his heavy arms crossed over his chest.
"It's only by her grace that you haven't yet been executed."
"Her grace, is it?"
Felix pressed his forehead against the bars and offered her a cold grin.
"Ah, perhaps she thinks we can get together again. But sorry, I don't share my bed with snakes."
"Let's move on," Amara said tightly. Felix smirked.
"Have you heard from your good friend Kyan on when he plans to finish reducing this world to ash with your help? A smoke signal? Anything?"
"Say the word, Empress," Carlos said, "and I will end this murderer's life myself."
Felix's gaze flicked to the guard.
"For what it's worth, she's the one who poisoned her father and brothers without a single blink of regret from those long eyelashes of hers. But I'm sure you won't believe me. Tell me, Princess, is Carlos the one warming your bed these days? Will you send him to the torture chamber as a diversion for your next crime?"
His words were the only weapons he had left. But he was a talented assassin. Each one left a wound.
"Perhaps your swift execution is best," Amara said slowly. "I don't know why I'm prolonging the inevitable."
"Oh, I don't know. Guilt?"
She ignored him, and, leaning on her cane, began to limp down the hallway to her destination, wishing to leave Felix Gabrus and his accusations far behind her.
"Do you know what I'm going to do to you when I get out of here?" Felix called after her. "I tell you, but I don't want to give you nightmares."
Felix had become like a shard of glass, one that hurt more the deeper it sank into her skin. Carlos spoke next, breaking the silence.
"He has been giving the guards great difficulties. He's violent and unpredictable."
"I agree."
"They want to know how you wish to deal with him."
Amara decided to reserve her nightmares for someone much worthier.
"I leave that decision up to you, Carlos."
"Yes, Your Grace."
It was time to remove this shard of glass and cast it away forever. Amara's mood had descended further into darkness by the time they reached her destination. The compound's prison was occupied mostly by rebels. Unlike many Palsians who embraced Amara's rule after suffering at the hands of King Gaius, these rebels didn't want to be ruled by anyone at all.
Ungrateful fools.
She was ready to be done with the lot of them, and with the sorceress's arrival and Gaius's release from this very prison, the sooner the better. Carlos stopped at the end of the hallway and nodded at the nearest guard to unlock the iron door.
"Empress," he began,
"I will speak to my brother alone."
His expression held uncertainty.
"I'm not sure that's wise, Your Grace. Even unarmed, your brother is dangerous. Every bit as dangerous as the assassin."
"So am I."
She opened the front of her cloak to reveal the blade she wore in a holder attached to a leather belt. Her grandmother had given it to her the day she'd wed Gaius de Mora. The traditional Cretian bridal dagger was meant to be passed down to one's daughter on her wedding day, a symbol of female strength in a world ruled by men. Carlos hesitated.
"As you command, Your Grace."
The guard unlocked the door. This one didn't have a window like Felix's, and she slipped inside. The door closed and locked behind her. Amara's gaze found her brother's instantly. Asher didn't rise from where he sat in a chair opposite the door. This was a larger cell than Felix's, at least three times as large, and furnished nearly as beautifully as a room in the royal residence. It had been used, quite obviously, for important prisoners of high status.
"Sister,"
Asher said simply. She took a moment to fully find her voice.
"I'm sure you're surprised to see me."
He didn't reply for a moment.
"How is your leg?"
Amara grimaced at the reminder of her injury, Not that she needed it.
Broken.
It will heal in time.
You sound so calm.
I would have expected...
What?
Anger?
Outrage?
Shock that you'd have me in prison for a heinous crime of which I had no part?
His voice rose.
What is this? A last visit from the Empress before I'm privately executed?
She shook her head.
Far from it. I mean to release you.
His gaze held naked disbelief.
Really?
There have been several developments since Kayan stole your friend's body.
Sudden pain flashed through his blue-gray gaze.
2 days, Amara. I've waited in here for 2 long days wanting information, but no one's told me a damn thing.
He inhaled sharply.
Is Niccolo all right? I have no idea.
Asher pushed himself up to his feet, and Amara instinctively clutched her dagger tighter. He glanced at it, frowning.
You wish to release me. But clearly you also fear me. I don't fear you. But your release requires an agreement from you. A very specific agreement.
You don't understand. There's no time for negotiations, he said.
I need to be released so I can find the answers I need. There is magic out there, sister, that could possibly help Niccolo. But I can't find it if I'm stuck in here.
Familiar frustration welled within Amara. Her brother, rich and handsome and influential, had developed a crush on a meaningless, red-haired former squire to the King of Aranus. Amara had been one of the few that knew of and wholly accepted Asher's romantic preferences over the years, but Niccolo Cassian wasn't worthy of the affections of her brother.
"You think you can save him, do you?"
she asked. Asher clenched his fists at his sides.
"Not from behind a locked door, I can't." "Give it another week. You'll forget all about him."
She ignored the darkness that slid behind Asher's gaze at her claim.
"I know you, brother. Something or someone new will draw your interest. In fact, I have something right here that might help."
Amara held out the parchment toward her brother. He snatched it away from her, his glare intense on her before he read the message.
"A message from Grandmother," he said. "The revolution has been crushed in its infancy, and she says that all is well."
Amara nodded.
"You can see that she asks me to return immediately to the jewel for my ascension."
"Yes. You've been Empress in name only up until now, haven't you? Must have the ascension ceremony to make everything binding for all eternity."
He scrunched the message up and let it fall to the floor.
"Why tell me this, Amara?
Do you wish for me to congratulate you?"
"No."
She took her hand off her dagger and began limping in short, nervous lines, the pain in her bound leg a welcome distraction.
"I came here to tell you that I regret very few decisions I've made these last months. But I deeply regret how I've treated you. I've been horrible to you."
Asher gaped at her.
"Horrible? You stabbed me in the heart! You betrayed me!"
This came out close to a scream before she managed to clamp down on her unhelpful emotions.
"You chose an alliance with Niccolo, with Cleo and Magnus, over one with your own sister."
"You leapt to conclusions like you always have," Asher growled. "You didn't give me a chance to explain. Had I not taken the resurrection potion, the death you gave me would have been permanent."
He stopped talking, taking a breath to compose himself.
"The moment you learned I lived, you blamed our family's murder on me, and had me thrown into a pit to become a meal for a monster. Please, sister, tell me how I can forgive and forget."
The future is more important than the past. I am Empress of Cretia, and that will be a fact forever chiseled into history after my ascension. I make the rules now, so what rules would you like me to follow, Your Grace? Amara flinched at his razor-sharp tone.
I wish to make amends between us. I want to show you that I regret what I've done when it comes to you. I was wrong.
The words tasted foul, but that made them no less true.
I need you, Usher. This has been proven to me time and again these last months. I need you by my side. I want you to come back with me to Cretia, where I will officially pardon you for the crimes you've been accused of.
Amara raised her chin and forced herself to meet his gaze. He stared back at her with unbridled shock.
You're the one who accused me of these crimes, he said.
I will tell everyone that was a plan set forth by Gaius. I've been forced to set him free, so what do I care if there's a target on his back?
Why were you forced to set him free?
Lucia de Mora arrived, she said. I thought it best not to cross a sorceress.
Amara hated how frightened she was of Lucia, but her magic was as incredible as rumored. In Uranus, Amara had seen only a glimpse of Lucia's power, but it had strengthened and grown since then. She knew she could not defeat her. And the child. Lucia had not given more information about the baby she'd arrived with, but there were rumors spreading like wildfire. Carlos himself had overheard the young man that Lucia had arrived with speaking with a friend about the baby, saying that she was Lucia's own child by blood, her child, and an immortal's. If true, this would be incredibly useful information. Between Lucia, Gaius, and the thought that Cayan was out there somewhere, waiting to return to burn everything down around her, Amara had had enough of this tiny kingdom that had only brought her misery.
All I care about is getting away from here, away from Mitica, she told Asher. I will not put myself or you in harm's way a moment longer. I'm going home for the ascension, as our grandmother requests. Perhaps you won't even believe this, given all I've done. But you are the only member of our family that I've ever valued.
Asher's expression turned wistful.
Neither of us ever fit in, did we, sister?
Not in the ways that Father would have liked.
She regarded him. Her defenses down, as she remembered how good it was to have someone to believe in wholly, someone to trust without question.
Leave the troubles of the past behind. Come with me, Usher. I will share my power with you and only you.
He held her gaze for a long moment.
No.
Surely she'd heard him wrong.
What?
He laughed coldly.
You wonder why I sided with Niccolo after knowing him for a handful of weeks? Because he possesses the purest heart I've ever known. Your heart, sister, is as black as death itself. Grandmother has worked her own particular kind of magic in manipulating you to her will, hasn't she? And you don't even realize it yet.
Amara's cheeks flamed.
You don't know what you're talking about.
Let me be as blunt as I can with you so there's no room for misunderstanding,
Asher said.
I will never, in a million years, trust you again, Amara. The choices you've made are unforgivable. I would rather live a life as a peasant than take any power you wish to share with me, knowing that any minute you would gladly plunge a dagger into my back if it served you better.
Amara fought against the tears that stung her eyes.
Are you so much of a fool that you'd give up the opportunity I've given you today? I want no part of your life anymore. You've chosen your path, sister, and it's one that will lead to your destruction.
Then you've made your final choice.
The words came out as a strangled cry.
Carlos, let me out of here!
A moment later, the door swung open. The words like daggers in her throat, she cast one last look at Asher.
Farewell, brother.
Outside the prison, the sky was dark with rain clouds. Amara leaned against the stone wall, trying to collect herself. She wondered how much Cleo's water magic had to do with the unpredictable weather over the last 2 days. The princess was in mourning for her lost husband. Magnus de Mora was dead.
Someone else you betrayed for your own gain, she thought.
She squeezed her eyes shut, wishing to block out the world. Amara knew she should celebrate Magnus's death, should thank Lord Curtis for removing one more enemy from her list if he ever showed his face again. After a moment, she opened her eyes. Amara's stomach lurched. Nerissa Florens was walking across the grounds toward her. The former attendant to the Empress and secret full-time rebel spy, secret, at least until very recently, came to a stop before the Empress. Yet another person Amara would prefer to avoid.
You are back from the search?
Amara asked tightly. Nerissa nodded.
The others will be back at dusk, but I wanted to check on Princess Cleo.
So kind of you.
You've been crying.
Amara fought the urge to wipe her eyes.
The compound is dusty, that's all. You went to visit your brother, didn't you?
Amara gave her a cutting smile.
Yes, I did, actually. In the very prison you would be in for treason had Cleo not intervened on your behalf. Don't give me a reason to change my mind.
Nerissa didn't react at all to the harshness in Amara's tone.
I know I hurt you.
Hurt me?
Amara laughed lightly at this.
That's rather unlikely.
Nerissa absently tucked a piece of her short black hair behind her ear.
I need you to know, Your Grace, that I sided against you only because you gave me no other choice. My loyalty is, and always has been, to Princess Cleo.
Amara gripped her cane tighter.
Yes. That's become crystal clear, Nerissa.
The betrayal had cut deeper than Amara would ever admit. Nerissa had swiftly become more than an attendant to her. More, even, than a friend. Nerissa blinked.
I saw it, you know.
Saw what?
Your true self. A part of you that isn't hard and cruel and hungry only for power.
The pain in Amara's leg shifted momentarily to her heart, but only for a moment. She forced a pinched smile to her lips once again.
You are only seeing things. Your mistake entirely.
Perhaps,
Nerissa said softly. Amara eyed the girl with disdain.
I had heard tales about you. Most that I dismissed as only rumors. It seems that your ability to seduce your way into influential beds is second to none. The perfect little rebel spy, aren't you? I seduce only those who are willing to be seduced.
Nerissa held her gaze for another small eternity before she bowed her head.
If you'll excuse me, Your Grace, I must see to the princess.
Amara watched the girl walk away toward the royal residence, her heart a tight knot in her chest. Her mind was set. It was time to leave Mitica. Time to plan her next move. Chapter 6 Jonas, Pelsia. Jonas had stayed at the royal compound far longer than he'd ever intended. He stayed for Cleo, for Taryn, for Enzo and Nerissa, and for Felix, who'd managed to get himself locked up again. And, it would seem, he stayed to help in the search for his former enemy. Lucia believed that Prince Magnus was dead, but the search still continued. When she'd asked Jonas to help, he found that he couldn't say no, after a long, exhausting, and fruitless day of searching the barren Palcian landscape beyond the gates of Basilia.